You're listening to the Body Pros podcast coverage of CROI 2009, the 16th Conference on Retroviruses and Opportunistic Infections. The conference took place in Montreal, Canada, from February 8th through February 11th, 2009.
In the following study summaries, Colette Smith of the University College Medical School in London and Carl Grunfeld of the University of California, San Francisco, discuss findings of their studies looking at pathogenesis of HIV complications. After the discussion, there will be a series of questions and answers.
As death from HIV-related factors has gone down, a series of diseases have emerged that are of interest in HIV infection. One is the issue of cardiovascular disease and HIV infection. For a background, it's well known that HIV infection itself and some of the drugs that are used to treat HIV infection have profiles that look like they would promote atherosclerosis. For example, reducing HDL or raising total cholesterol, causing diabetes. The question, therefore, was whether or not HIV itself was a risk factor above the effects on traditional risk factors. Now, why is this important? It's important because when you're sitting in a doctor's office, the doctor is supposed to look at your cardiovascular disease risk factors. Do you smoke? Do you have diabetes? What's your good cholesterol? What's your bad cholesterol? What's your blood pressure? And assessing those factors by a series of guidelines come to a conclusion as to whether or not you should be treated and how rigorously you should be treated. If all of the effects of HIV are associated with the traditional risk factors, then that's simple. But if there's an effect of HIV above traditional risk factors, you have to know that to advise patients with HIV infection. And that's true in other diseases, for instance, like rheumatoid arthritis, where the risk is above those of traditional risk factors. Unfortunately, the previous studies in HIV have been fairly limited. There are database studies where the rate of myocardial infarction is higher, but they can't adjust for traditional risk factors because they don't have full measurements of how many people smoke, who has diabetes, what are the lipids, what's the blood pressure. You can't pull that out of a database. The best surrogate marker for years has been something called carotid IMT. And those studies were ambiguous in HIV infection for a variety of reasons, one of which, many of them were small, and the other of which is that there's an easy way to do it and there's a more complicated way to do it. And what we did was do both the easy way and the more complicated way with a very large set of control subjects so that we really could adjust for traditional risk factors. And when we did that, we found that in both ways of measuring the carotid, HIV infection was clearly associated with more atherosclerosis after adjusting for traditional risk factors. So yes, there is an additive effect of HIV. It was more obvious in a difficult way than an easy way, but we were big enough to say it's clear HIV is an additional risk factor so that when you advise patients in your office, you can say, here's your standard risk, but because you have HIV, you are at higher risk.
As a background, we've seen in recent years that there's been dramatic reductions in HIV-related mortality amongst HIV-infected people, but we still see that these rates are higher than those in the general population. Therefore, the aim of our study was to investigate these further and see whether we could identify modifiable risk factors and look at the specific causes of death in our populations. So we had 33,000 individuals, and in these 33,000 individuals, we saw 2,192 deaths. And this gave us a rate of death of 13.8 per 1,000 person years of follow-up. And we found the most common causes of death were AIDS-related deaths, which, despite this being a cohort who were attending regularly for care, and despite the fact that they had freely available antiretroviral therapy, still 32% of the deaths were attributable to AIDS-related causes. And then the next most common causes of death were liver, non-AIDS malignancies, and cardiovascular-related diseases, which were between 14 and 11% of all of the deaths for each of the cause. And when we started to look at the factors that were associated with this, we found that smoking was associated with an increased risk of death from cardiovascular disease and non-AIDS malignancies. We found that lower BMIs was associated with all-cause mortality and with AIDS and non-AIDS malignancies-related deaths. We found that those who were hypertensive were at an increased risk of liver-related or cardiovascular-related disease. Those who were Hep C or Hep B positive had an increased risk of liver disease. And we generally found that those who had lower CD4 counts were at a higher risk of death from all of the causes, although the effect was marginal when looking at cardiovascular endpoints. And finally, we found that the effect of viral load, sort of the current viral load, was such that as the viral load increased, the risk of death from AIDS-related and liver-related causes also increased. So we found that there were a number of important traditional risk factors that were associated with death in our population, such as smoking and hepatitis. And we also found that some more specific HIV risk factors, such as CD4 and viral load, were associated both with AIDS-related deaths and some of the specific non-AIDS-related causes. We'd hope that further research looking into whether modifying the CD4 count and the viral load could perhaps lead to reductions in mortality from these causes.
Dr. Grunfeld and Dr. Smith, if you could talk about what we've seen some studies that suggest with certain drugs, protease inhibitors in the back of ear, raise the risk of cardiovascular disease, of heart attacks, and it's been suggested that patients who are at risk of heart attacks shouldn't use those drugs. So your findings combine with those in any way? In other words, should everybody with HIV avoid those drugs, or...
I think we would all hesitate to make a recommendation for everybody with HIV. What's clear, particularly from our study, is that HIV infection itself has bad consequences. The effect of HIV infection on atherosclerosis above and beyond the effects of HIV and the drugs on risk factors is the equivalent of being male, smoking, or diabetes. Okay? I believe that the effect of HIV infection is much larger than the small signals seen with those drugs, which, by the way, may affect later steps than the atherosclerosis that we measure. So I think one has to be cautious. And given the fact that we know treating HIV works, the decision should be modified a bit by what drug you put someone on based upon what we know. But it's clear that the major thing to do is to treat the infection effectively.
I think another clarification that with Dr. Grunfeld's presentation is the analysis didn't look at the role of drugs or didn't have the ability to look at individual drugs. So it was a summary effect of HIV and or its treatment.
Yeah, and similarly with our study, from the results I presented this morning, we didn't actually look at specific drugs. We just looked at the modifiable risk factors rather than specific drugs. So I'm not sure that the data from this morning would enable you to answer that question, but there's been a lot on specific drugs and cardiovascular at other sessions as well.
Dr. Grunfeld, could you give us a better sense as to the impairment of HIV, how it compares with other risk factors such as smoking, et cetera? Is it bigger, smaller? You know, give us a context of how it stacks
up. It is virtually the same as being male. It is virtually the same as being a current smoker. It may be slightly higher than diabetes or the same, depending upon which area of the carotid we're looking at. And it's the equivalent of 5 to 10 years of age. So it is in the same ballpark as the risk factor, as the major traditional dichotomous risk factors that we worry about, smoking, male gender.
So in essence, one can construct an algorithm of adding up the risk factors and see how things stand.
I don't think we're at the stage where we can mathematically construct a formula and add it up. But we have a signal that it's very similar to those, and we could say, yes, it's the equivalent of getting diabetes.
From the beginning, there's been, I don't know how to put it gently, but confusion about how to measure IMT and arguments about was it measured the right way, was it the best measurement. From your perspective, is there any movement towards standardization of carotid IMT measurements in trials?
There is movement, in part based upon the FRAM study, in part based upon a recent working group of many of the grants that are studying cardiovascular disease going forward, with the idea of looking more at the bulb region, the quote, more difficult region, that actually is better at picking up the signals for risk factors. But clearly, what we've shown is that in both regions, you can find the effect if you've got a large enough group of HIV-infected and control subjects to be able to adequately adjust. But there definitely is a movement to begin to look at the other region.
Okay, for us non-experts, can you give us a quick summary of bulb region? What's the other region?
So the common carotid goes up and it's straight flow. It's less susceptible to risk factors. At the point that you divide into the internal carotid and the external, the exact point of division is called the bulb, and then there's the internal. That's an area of turbulence. Areas of turbulence are actually the first areas to get atherosclerosis, and they're much more susceptible to things like lipids. It's why early lesions in the heart are proximal. They're near, in the periphery, they're proximal. So, but that's a more difficult area to measure. So many people have preferred the common because it's easier to measure. But the issue you raised, which is an important one, the NIH already has moved on in recommending in a conference of the people doing many of the going forward IMT studies, we've come to an agreement to measure common and bulb.
Did you have any data on HIV, on viral loads? Were you able to see any?
That analysis is not yet ready. It is being done. Okay. The point that we needed to make is the point for clinicians, which is that in the context of traditional risk factors, HIV is an extra one. My prediction, knowing the data, is that the effect of HIV is not going to be able to be accounted for by things like viral load. But we don't have those analyses finished yet.
Yeah, and I think importantly, being a collaborator on this project, we don't have enough untreated patients to be able to maybe contrast the difference between suppressed and unsuppressed.
That's for sure.
Yeah, so that may be a limitation of what we're going to be able to find.
The FRAM study is representative statistically of HIV in the United States compared to the HCSIS study, which attempted to be represented. We're very, very similar. But we're talking about 97% of patients having been treated and 94% having heart. So we can't make that comparison. On the other hand, the reality is that in the United States and in most developed countries, a very high percentage of patients are treated. And these are the patients that we have to worry about cardiovascular disease.
You know, as many as 50 to 80% of the patients in the study being smokers to start with are people with HIV smoking. Do you have enough patients left over who, once you correct for smokers, to really have a high enough numbers to see differences in risk factors?
Yes, we're below. We're about at 40%. And the two are independent. There is a risk of smoking. There is a risk of HIV. Obviously, smoking is a modifiable risk factor, but a very difficult one to modify. And the take-home lesson, you know, from patients with diabetes is you work as hard as you can to modify the modifiable risk factors. And I would urge everyone with HIV infection, taking care of patients with HIV infection, to do the same thing. Modify the modifiable risk factors until we understand what in HIV does this.
Would smoking and having HIV basically double your risk of IMT growth?
I can't quote the exact number, but smoking and HIV clearly significantly increase your risk of... Okay, the smoking was 36% versus 15% in controls. Smoking clearly, significantly, maybe in that ballpark, increases your risk of having atherosclerosis. Now, her data show, and our data from FRAM mortality, which was shown in a poster, all show that smoking increases deaths in HIV. It's a very important risk factor.
The opinions expressed by hosts or interviewees in this podcast do not constitute professional advice, should not be considered substitutes for professional services, and do not necessarily represent the opinions of Body Health Resources Corporation or its sponsors. Please see the full disclaimer online at thebodypro.com. If you have comments or questions, please contact us.
Thank you for listening to this report from CROI 2009. For more coverage of this conference, visit us online at thebodypro.com/CROI2009.